Actually, I'm going dock starting around lunch today, I think, with a friend of mine.
You know, if you need a break, you just say so. We're gonna
No, no, no,
put an ad to our sponsor in.
no,
No, no
no.
worries
No,
about
no,
that.
no.
But what? This is up on foil, the podcast for everyone flying just above the surface. Pump, carve, soar, let's foil. Welcome to episode number 59 of Up on Foil, the podcast where we talk all about foiling. And today is with Jens. He designed the Foil Sessions app. We're going to talk all about the app. We're going to talk about you as well, because you switched 100% to developing these app and other apps. And super exciting. Thank you very much, Jens, for coming on the show. Is there anything you want to add right away at the beginning so people can like get to know you a little better?
No, I think you've covered it pretty good, and yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really grateful.
It's super exciting. I'm really grateful because I just come back from this long distance dock start wing comparison, and I used your app to track, and it's super exciting and very interesting to see your side of it as well. And
Yeah.
let's just start with the app. And why did you think it was necessary to have such an app?
Yeah, I started wing foiling a few years back, and back then there were no foiling apps whatsoever, you know. There were these like the Water Speed app and Water Tracker or something like that, it's called Water Sports Tracker. So there were a couple of like water tracking activity apps, but there were no apps for foiling, you know. And I wanted to track, as a beginner, you're really interested in like, yeah, how much time do I spend up on foil? And how much time do I spend floating around in the water trying to get up on foil? So that's kind of like a metric that's interesting in the beginning, you know, like, yeah, it's is it 80% or 50 or 20, and you'll see your progression. And I think that's also one of the things that's so fun with foiling, that you the progression and the steps that you go through is very binary. Like, yeah, now I can stand on the board, before I couldn't. Now I can foil for 500 meters, before I couldn't. You know, and it's always these small incremental steps that you take, and that makes your brain happy.
When, because usually when I foil now with the Parawing in summer, especially, I use an app as well to track. I was always surprised because I thought I would be on foil like, 90, 95%, no problem. And then I look at it, oh, wasn't that good? Is that the same with you? Were you
Yeah,
surprised to
for
see,
sure.
right?
Especially when I started, so I started developing an app to cater for those specific needs as a foiler. You know, you wanted to know like how much time do I spend up on foil. There were no apps that were counting tacks and jibes properly, stuff like that. But yeah, I was really surprised as well. Like my first goes with my app was like, ah, this can't be it. It's so bad. But you know, even if you like, if you go out for an hour session, it's like if you get, you know, 15 minutes not being on foil, that's 25% that you're not foiling. So it's not like only 75% foiling on that session. But yeah, like those numbers might look a little bit disappointing, I guess. But yeah, it is what it is. You know, like it's the same thing with uptime for computers. If you got like a server and it's got like an uptime of 98%, that's horrible. You know, it's just can't be down for more than a few seconds a month. But yeah, anyway, yeah. So that's
We're gonna get into your background as a programmer a little later on. I would really like to learn more about the app and have people learn about the app, because it's not only for fun metrics and maybe give you brag rights, like, look, I did 100% of my dock starts. There's also a safety part now, as you've said last time we talked, with that new feature that you have where you can have your end goal marked so you can find it. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, sure. This idea actually came from one of my test users. I think one of the app would not be where it is if I wouldn't have all these test users that are like constantly giving me new ideas. So this guy came up with an idea that, yeah, I want to know, I need to know how far from the start point I am. So that was how all this like this feature started. So I implemented that, and you got like also an estimate, like if you're foiling it will take you like an hour, and if you're swimming it will take you 4 4 hours or 5 hours to get back to that point. So that's pretty good. And then it was like, yeah, I would also really need to know like the direction. I'm like, ah, that is pretty hard. I'll see what I can do about that. And then few months later, it popped up again. And then someone actually wanted, yeah, I want to know like a destination. I want to know how far I'm from a destination that I set. And I'm like, yeah, it's kind of similar to that return to your start point thingy. So I started thinking about that. And then I, it's one of those things, you know, it's, you just get a feeling and you get into this flow. And I'm just like I actually started pretty late one evening. I'm just like, yeah, let's try this thing. And then I hammered out a user interface on the iPhone where you can set the point where you want to go. And then that syncs to your Apple Watch. And then on the Apple Watch, you get this arrow indicating the heading to the destination. And you also get the same estimate as you do on the get back to your starting point. So you get like, yeah, it's going to take you 4 hours to reach this if you're foiling. If you're not foiling, it will take you 10 hours. Stuff like that. So that was pretty convenient. Now I've actually added cross-track error as well. So you know how far from that, if you draw a line between the starting point and the destination. So the cross-track error is how far off you're from that line. So you know, like, yeah, I need to get back a little bit more to the left or a little bit more to the right to that line. So
I
yeah, I think
believe.
that's pretty convenient, and it makes it a lot easier to find your destination if you're like doing a downwinder along this coast with like featureless coast. You know, the coastline turns pretty gray and it's hard to find where you're heading. Even if you've been there before, it's kind of hard to find your way around sometimes. And then you just glance at your watch and you'll see the arrow, it's pointing that direction, and you'll see that, yeah, it's 5 kilometers to go and it will take me, I don't know, 20 minutes or 15 minutes or so.
If you set this destination point, is that just one point you can like pin, or can you do like several, like in maybe mountaineering or something, where you go around maybe a cliff and then find your entrance into a harbor? Is that just one point so far?
Yeah, so right now it's just one point. And the starting point, it's set automatically. So the start point is as soon as you started recording, like the first position the watch app gets, that's like your starting point. And then the destination is the one that you set on the on your iPhone. So it's a pretty obvious improvement to add like waypoints as well. So we'll see where that goes in the future.
That leads me to the next question, because there's so many ideas that you could do, but you don't want to overcomplicate it neither. You know, I still have this sleek, simple app that people intuitively can use. How is that balance going?
That is super hard, you know, and you also need to, like, there are so many users that are super happy and they're so engaged in the app and they want to help out and they got these great ideas, and sometimes the ideas are truly great, and sometimes, yeah, you have to like try to figure out that, yeah, he this user got this idea, but what he really needs to solve is this problem, and then maybe I have a better solution to that problem than he came up with. So it's always this balance, you know, and then it's really hard to build an app that does a lot of things without it getting like cluttered with buttons and features everywhere. So I think I'm striking a pretty good balance there. But yeah, it is hard. And you know, just like this simple thing that we're talking about, the destination feature. Yeah, sure, like just tapping and that's your destination. That is super easy. Anyone can figure it out, you know. It takes 2 seconds to understand how that feature works. But if you want to do like these waypoint things, and you should like draw these like lots of dots on the map, that is pretty hard to make a user interface that works for everyone, you know. So yeah, it is really hard. I think that's one of the hardest things to do. Just look at Excel and Microsoft Word, you know, those were pretty good word processors and spreadsheets back in the days, but now they're so complicated, it's really hard to use them.
I can, because what I also think is super difficult, but that's not your app specifically. That's just handling these things. Because usually when I'm dock starting, for example, or even foiling, any other foiling discipline, My hands are wet, and the phone and the watch. They're terrible to use when your hands are wet. And if you hold them down like that, then the water, even if you have dry hands, it starts dripping down from your wetsuit, which again makes it super difficult to handle. But that's just what you have to do. So I get that you have to keep it as simple as possible, but still have these great features.
Yeah, the only thing you can do on the Apple Watch on the water is basically just turning the digital crown, you know, and that let you switch between the views from like the destination to the number of dock starts if you're doing that, or tacks and jibes or stuff like that. And I think that's a place where, or a point in the Apple Watch where Apple really just failed, you know, because especially on the Ultra, you got the crown, you got like one button next to the crown, and then you got the action button on the other side.
Yeah.
And you can press the crown as well. So there is like, you can scroll, you can press the crown, and then there are two other buttons. But they don't let you do anything with these buttons. So there are no proper APIs. Or there is an API for the action button. That is pretty useless. So it's like, what? It would be easy to make it a lot better for the user if Apple would allow it, but they don't. So it's it is what it is. It's really hard to do anything on the water except just like scrolling between different views. That's the only thing you can do.
But still, if you're on foil, when I was pump foiling like last week, then even just like turning the crown was difficult already. Looking at the watch was no problem, but then like going through it while not falling, sometimes even with a camera in the hand, was quite difficult. But still, it was super helpful. And then I thought, well, the app is only as good as the sensors in it, or as the like connection, talking about the heart rate, for example. He said that I had to wear the watch as tight as possible. But then again, of course, I have the wetsuit on. And I like pulled my wetsuit back and like took another wristband and tried to tighten it as much as possible. Because if I would put the wetsuit over the watch, then heart rate would be better, but probably GPS wouldn't be as good.
Yeah.
So there's always a trade-off. How do you manage that? Like simple or small mistakes like that, for example, in the heart rate when the watch like disconnects or something.
It is really hard, actually, and you also have the issue that as soon as you put the watch into the water, it loses GPS reception as well. So that's also a problem. And then you get all these not very accurate GPS measurements that you have to handle somehow in the app. And it's super hard because you don't know really, is this a bad GPS position or is it just like the user moved 10 meters? You can't really tell that from the data you get from the watch. So yeah, that is super hard. I think during winter, that's where you have the most issues because you have a wetsuit, you know. So I usually pull up the wetsuit and then I put my phone on my wrist. And then if I have a glove or something, I peel that down as well. So I have this stretch of skin where the watch is on my arm. So there is a glove here and then there is a wetsuit here. And then in the middle, there is a watch. So I think that works down to, I don't know, 4, maybe 3 degrees Celsius, something like that. But then even that starts to get too cold. You could roll over the wetsuit on top of the iPhone or the Apple Watch. When the water gets into the wetsuit, it actually makes the GPS reception a lot worse. So then you have that issue. It is super hard, you know. Like you said, the app is only as good as the position data it gets from the GPS. And there's a lot of things that mess up that for you. And also wearing the app on the outside of the wetsuit, that's a big no-go because then it will actually just think that you just dropped it or left it somewhere. So it will lock itself down. And then you need to like unlock it from like the water lock. And then you need to enter your PIN code to just see what the app is doing, you know. And quite often
while
the app,
being on foil.
Yeah, while being on foil, you know, it's like, it's impossible. You can't do it. So, to be honest, I think Garmin is a lot better in that regard. If you want to do water sports in the winter, or even if you want to like being able to control the buttons with your fingers while on the water, it's a much better choice for that. But I don't have an app for that just yet, so but we'll see.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that later because you're a one-man show, and it's
Yeah.
super hard to find time. I want to still like stay on the app, and especially like my test from last week. Sometimes when I like turned my wrist, it didn't like appear. The display didn't activate, and I had to touch it. Sometimes it worked, but that's not an app issue. That's an Apple Watch issue. Do you know if is it possible to have like an always on display that the app is always like showing?
No, I don't think so. I haven't seen any APIs about that, but you could turn on the time it will stay on, I think.
All
So you
right.
can
Okay.
increase that in the settings of the app, so it at least doesn't turn dim as fast.
Yeah.
And then, like always, if you have an old Apple Watch, it will just turn black.
Yeah.
And if you have a newer one, it will always stay on. And if you got like an even newer one, the always on is a little bit more on, if you get it. So, like always, just like, yeah, you could always, I don't know, buy yourself out of that issue, kind of. It gets better if you get a newer watch, but yeah.
When you develop an app like that, you must have different versions of Apple Watches as well.
Yeah, I've got like right now I have two, like one, like the original Apple Watch Ultra. And I have a like the latest Ultra Apple Watch. So I got like two Ultra Apple Watches, but I don't have like the smallest one. And just recently, another Matt actually on the progression forum, he was like, "Yeah, it's really hard to see." And yeah, I accidentally bought like the smallest Apple Watch. And I'm like, "Yeah, I haven't tested much on the smallest Apple Watch, you know." So yeah, it's I should probably have one of those as well, but. Not that much, but when you work for a company, all my work I've been like working for like 5 or 6 or 7 years for a single company, and every year you buy like the new phone. So after a few years, you have this stack of phones, which is kind of funny. But I don't have that much gear right now, actually.
When you started the app, you did it for yourself, I suppose. And now you said you had a bunch of testers, probably from all over the world, doing various disciplines. What are the most used disciplines? Do you know, like metrics like that, or where is the data actually stored?
So, before I started doing this full time, I worked for a security company called Yubico, which makes these. Let's see if I got one here. Yeah, they make security keys. They look like this. So, do you see it? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, they're used for authentication and encryption, decryption, stuff like that. After like 5 years working at this company, you get pretty paranoid. And I've decided to not do any tracking at all in my app. So there are no tracking libraries. I don't do any tracking. The app does not report any usage to me. So I don't really know what everyone is doing. I only know what like the people that actively send me their sessions do. And usually I ask for a specific kind of session. So right now it's prone foiling. It's the hardest discipline to get right. And you can't prone foil in Stockholm where I live. So I don't do that discipline myself either, which makes it even harder. So most of the sessions that I see from the users are actually prone sessions. But with that being said, I think the prone session users are in a minority. I think most of the users are probably just winging or dock starting. Maybe downwinding and parrowing is getting bigger as well, I think. But yeah, it's really hard. I don't know really the numbers there. So yeah, no user tracking whatsoever. And all the data is stored in Apple's Health Kit, so I don't see the data unless you decide to send it to me.
All right, because that's the difference to other like services. I know there's one in Switzerland, foyda.ch, but everything's up there. So it's the privacy thing is a big plus for your app, I'd say.
Yeah, I think it's both a plus and a minus. So if you actually do collect all the data, you can have these online leaderboards, and you can see what your friends are doing. I'm just like, really scared of creating like this social platform that then someone will just hack into and just, you know, share all my users on the dark web or something like that. So I'm really scared of that part, because I've seen a lot of bad stuff happening to companies from my previous employee or my previous work. So I'm really scared of that part. But if you actually do collect all that stuff, you can do a lot of fun things with it as well. So it's like that coin has two sides, I'd say. But for a one-man shop like I am, being able to like host that service or like that community thing, keeping that safe and secure, keeping the data safe, you know, and you need to encrypt the data and all that stuff. It's just too much work, I think, for me at least. Maybe in the future, you know, I would love to add that kind of stuff if you could opt in. Like, yeah, I want to share everything with these people. So, but yeah, I don't know. It is a difficult choice you have to make.
Yeah. And there are, compared to when you started, a bunch of options now. There are other apps as well. Do you look at these apps as well when developing? Are you even maybe in contact with other app developers? Because at the end, basically everyone wants the same thing. Would that even be an option to like merge with other like companies?
I've of course downloaded and tried all the other foiling apps, like Foilmotion and what's this? There are two, I think they're Swiss both, right? Foilmotion and the...
Foilmotion is Swiss, yeah.
And then this, what's his name? Foiler. Mango, CH. I think.
Yeah, I Mango. Mango.
Nick's Mango.
7L or I, I'm not sure. Water.
Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce it, but yeah. So yeah, I keep an eye on those apps as well, of course. Yeah. And I know they also keep an eye on me, because Sasha, which is the developer of Foilmotion, is one of my test flight users. So that's kind of fun.
Have you like, when testing their app, seen like a feature like, oh, this is such a good idea? Or maybe the other way around, like, oh, mine is way better in that regard.
Yeah, both for sure, you know. Yeah, that happens all the time when you see like new features in other apps. You're just like, ooh, that's nice implementation. And it doesn't have to be other foil apps, you know, it could be like the mail app from Apple. So that happens all the time. And I hope they see every now and then a feature in my app they think is good, but I don't know.
I really like about your app, and honestly, I hope it's your app, because I've been testing these different apps as well. And when I look back, like all my sessions, I'm not really sure which one I used when, but I think it's with your app when doing wind sports that you have to first like tell the app where the wind is coming from. Is that?
Yeah, that's my app. Right? It tries to pull the wind data from a weather service. And if it fails, you have to set it manually.
Okay. All right. Yeah, good. Because I think that's really cool. And then you see all the jibes that you can do and the tags you cannot do. So,
yeah, and also you see stats for like starboard or port jibes, starboard port tacks, and like success rate and everything. So it's pretty useful.
Can we have like a maybe 30 seconds to 1 minute segment where you say why your app is the best app to use at the moment?
Oh man, I haven't prepared that.
That's super hard.
No. But yeah, why you would use my app instead of Foilmotion, for example? I think that's really difficult, because there are, you know, Foilmotion, there are some parts where that app is better than mine. But I think my app, I hope so at least, it will be like the user interface. I put a lot of effort and hard work into making the user interface as beautiful and easy to use as possible. And I think that's one part where my app is slightly better than the other apps. I also think I'm trying to cover all the disciplines. You know, I want an app that's perfect for dock starting, downwinding, parawinging, wing foiling, everything. And I think I've done a pretty good job at that point as well. And then there's, of course, the privacy part. You know, your data is only your data, not until you share it with me or with anyone else. No one will see what you're doing on the water or how you're using the app or that stuff. So yeah, I hope people like the app, and I think it's It's looking very, very good. It's a good looking app, and I'm really proud of that.
I would add those safety features that you talked about at the beginning, like the swimming back when you go out there or the destinations thing. That's a huge plus. I don't think the other ones have that yet, maybe.
No, I don't think I haven't seen it either, so yeah.
So that's a huge plus.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, there are so many features in the app now. You know, when I started, it was just like it was tracking time on foil, you know, like what percentage were you foiling with the app? That was basically it. And then you got this track going back and forth in one single color. So now it got like the tracks are colored according to your speed or your heart rate. It tacks jibes, tacks, starboard port tacks. You know, it does so many things. If you're downwinding, it will track how many waves or rides have you done and like how long were they, what were your pace, and for dock starting, like all these things that weren't there from the beginning. So it just keeps adding new features all the time.
Are there any features that you're working on that could be super interesting for like the close future, like in the next couple of weeks, months?
Yeah, the cross track error is coming out Wednesday today, maybe next week, I'd say. So you'll see cross track error on the destination view, which is nice. And I'm also adding a search feature. So once you start getting over like 50 or 100 sessions in the app, it's kind of hard to find the interesting sessions. Or if you want to list, like, there is a note feature where you can scribble down a few notes, like what gear did you use? What was the condition? How did you feel? Was it a good session or a bad session? Did you hate it? Or yeah, you know, did you swear all the time and just hate life, or was it fun? But it was like that data was really hard to, and you notice that as well, because we had a chat about that, which is also, you know, talking about with users having needs and wants of the app, that's super interesting. And then like taking a question or a something that a user want to do with the app and make something useful out of that. So from that discussion with you, I took that and I added like a small search feature in the app. So now you can actually write, yeah, I want to see all my downwinding sessions at a specific spot. So I could write like downwinding and maybe Tore, which is our local spot, and then the app will list all the downwind sessions I've done at Tore, instead of me having to scroll through, like I have 150 sessions in my app now. So you know, like finding those are close to impossible. They're just like
Wow.
buried like a needle in a haystack. And then you can also search for gear. You know, I want to know all my sessions where I've used my Armstrong 1180 foil. Then you just write HA 1180 if you say that in the notes for the sessions. So that's super useful, especially for long-term users. If you've just used the app for 5 sessions, that won't help you much. You know, so you'll see all those sessions on the first screen. But for the long-term users, that's going to be super helpful.
That makes a lot of sense. Is your user base growing? Is it going the way you planned it would?
No, you know, I guess you got the same experience and from your podcast. You know, it never grows as fast as you would like it
Sure.
to, you know. But yeah, it's maybe it's hard to tell. It's a subscription-based app. You get a few sessions for free, and then you have the option to sign up for a subscription, which is super cheap compared to what a foil costs, but it's still a subscription, so that's there's some friction there. But and then you have like a 30-day trial period before the subscription actually starts. Yeah, and you can cancel any time up till I think 24 hours before the subscription starts. But
What's the
yeah, anyway,
price? People
so
are surely interested. What's the price?
it's different in different countries, and that is something that Apple kind of decides. So I can't really tell exactly how much it is in, but around 200 euros a year. And then I think for some markets, it's up to 250 euros and then maybe down to 170. So it kind of depends. That's Apple's pricing strategy that decides that part. So it's not me.
Can you tell or can you share maybe how many people are using the app?
Yeah, so I think right now there are around. You see that when you do a new release, you can see how many have updated the app to the next release. So I think the latest release was around 400 users. So it's still like a super, super small app. You know, when I was working for Yubico, I think we had close to 1 million users. So from 1 million users to 400, it's a huge step, you know, maybe not in the right direction, but it's a lot more fun. So it's worth it. So yeah, maybe 400 users.
All right. I was also curious, because do you have Foil Assist in your app as well? Like,
yeah, you can actually, there are assisted wave, I think it's called. There is a mode for riding waves, like prone surfing with a Foil Assist. And that will actually do pretty much the same analysis of the session as a normal foil session. But it will not, I think it counts it as slightly different. So yeah, you can do assisted.
That leads me to the follow-up question, because I use Foil Drive sometimes, and it would be super cool to see on the watch as well, like battery levels, how much thrust I give, and it would like alert me when the battery drops below 20%. Is like a working with those companies, would that be also something, or are you all like full with your other projects, or would that be anything like to see in the future?
Well, actually, I haven't been in touch with Foil Drive, because they use the Matic remote, and there is no Bluetooth support in that, or it didn't have any Bluetooth support when I looked at it. But I think also Foil Drive, it's such a big company right now, and my app is such a small app. So I think they would not, you know, it's just such a small niche. How many of my users are Foil Drive users? I don't know, maybe a handful, 10 maybe, or 5, I don't know. And then they have thousands of users, so they probably want to focus their development efforts on making life better for everyone, not those 10 people that just happens to use my app. If the app grows, maybe they'd be interested. I've been in touch with, what is the name of that company? The one that does the toe boogie.
Yeah. I'm not
the
sure
Australian.
Yeah.
Pardon?
I'm not sure, but the toe boogie, yes, I'm familiar with that a little bit. And you've
been
talking
to them? Yeah, so I've been having a short discussion with them, and they have a different remote, so maybe would be possible to add support for that one. And then there is this pretty big community of people building their own e-foil setups. Yeah. And the remote has always been an issue. So there is this guy in Germany, I think, or maybe it's in Switzerland, BRE Bremote. So he's made like an open source remote, and that one has Bluetooth support and all the stuff that you need. So I have a pretty long discussion with him about adding support for his remote, and then you'd be able to see like, yeah, your battery level and yeah, all the temperatures of the ESC and the battery and the motor and stuff like that. So that would be interesting. So it's definitely on the roadmap.
I would, because you say, yeah, you're not that like big yet for Foil Drive, but I don't think Foil Drive has an app that goes with it. So that could be also a possibility. If you get Foil Drive, you get like 1 year of subscription to your app, because they're paying a lot already.
I think Foil Drive has an app, but I'm not sure.
Because I've seen an app to like do settings and whatnot, but not for tracking, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe,
maybe
I should.
I'm wrong.
Yeah. I'll, maybe I should contact them and see what happens.
Let's talk about that later. I want to get into like your story, your foiling story. You said that you started with wing foiling. Was that the first time you were on foil, on a wing foil?
Yeah. The first time I saw someone foiling, I was like, yeah, that looks kind of boring, dull, you know, it is like, I didn't really see the point. I was kiting,
right?
Yeah, yeah, I have a kiting background. So I started kiting in 2007. And, you know, I did the normal transition from twin tip to surfing. So I did like wave kiting the last few years. And, you know, the conditions has to be like perfect here in Stockholm for for it to be fun, really. So there's like not a lot of days, and then, you know, you got the work-life balance stuff that makes it hard to get away from, you know, I've got kids like you, and, you know, it's just, yeah, you don't, those days were perfect conditions, usually were the days where you had a meeting or you had to do something with the kids or something like
Classic.
That. So, yeah, so I didn't get to do as much kiting as I would like to. Then I saw foiling and wing foiling, and I'm like, yeah, that does not look very fun. And then, I don't know, my friend Jesper kind of like, oh, come on, man, you're stupid, you have to try this. And eventually I caved in, and we did like a session on ice with ice skates. And I was like, yeah, this might be interesting. And then next summer I bought like all the stuff you need, like a humongous board and this F1, it looked like a whale thing, front foil that was like 2,400 square centimeters, you know, this huge thing.
Yeah.
I doubt I could foil that today, but yeah, you know, back in the day that was
interesting.
Yeah, that'd be interesting for sure. And then I actually took a class in e-foiling at a local company here in Stockholm. And after that first hour, I was like, yeah, I'm never going to learn this. This is just impossible. But yeah, eventually I like cracked the code and yeah, started foiling.
Very nice. Very nice. When did you start dock starting?
It was this spring, actually. So March, I think, April this year. So, but dock starting, I think dock starting now, it's not the same as like 2 years back. You know, the gear is so good. It's not the same at all, but
and it gets a little more affordable. Well, it depends which route you're taking. It can be much more expensive, but also more affordable depending which way you want to go. There's something for everyone now.
Yeah, that's super nice. I started with a gong setup, like the Kluber 80 and an XXL Cirrus.
The Cirrus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Cirrus. Yeah. Super nice setup. So that was very easy to learn. You know, I think, I don't remember, but I think I like the 1 minute mark was probably, I don't know, session number 15 or 10 or something like that. So it's,
very nice. You seem like a tall, big man. How tall are you? What's your weight?
No, I'm like 184, 75 kilos.
Okay. Okay.
So super average,
well, that's
I'd say.
Probably around average.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Oh, congratulations. Session number 15. That's not too bad.
No. But, you know, I've been wing foiling for a long time, you know, when I started dock starting. So
yeah,
it's kind of cheating.
Still, when I started dock starting, I knew how to wing foil. Well, I mess up my tacks every other time, but I thought I knew how to foil. And then I thought, all right, dock starting is going to be easy. And then I realized it's not. And sometimes it is still not easy. Like if you switch to another foil or the dock is just 20 centimeters higher or lower, then it's like, oof, I'm going to like have to get used to that start again. A little earlier, a couple of maybe years ago, I want to talk about that because you sent me that link. You traveled from Europe to the US. You did a transatlantic sailing trip in a super small boat.
Yeah.
And I just want to, I'm going to put the link that you sent me in the show notes as well. You had a pirate encounter or something got stolen. Can you maybe just like it pretty shortly, just tell us how, why you did that, how it was, and if you were to suggest people should do that as well?
Oh yeah, it's been a long time now. So I usually, well, most of the people that I know in Sweden, they know that I did this. Well, if someone got questions, I'll bring it up, but I usually don't bring it up. But anyways, yeah, it was 2007, 2008, so it's a long, long time ago now. But I had a J80, which is, it's 8 meters long. It's a race boat, basically. But it's rated for offshore racing, so it's pretty sturdy. It's heavy built, or it's not a heavy boat, but it's you can like drop it from 2 meters down into the water and it will just do fine. So I had that boat and we did a lot of sail racing in Stockholm. We got this Gotland Runt, which is a offshore race that we usually did like every year. It's up to like 48 hours, 2 days on the water. It's super fun. Or it was, I haven't done it in a few years. And then we sailed from Stockholm to Gotland, me and two friends, and it was this, you know what a tropical night is? It's something that we talk about in Sweden. It's if the temperature never drops below 20 degrees Celsius.
Yeah, we have, which, not often, like, sometimes,
yeah. Yeah, not very often. But, and it's in Sweden, it's called a tropical night or something like that. Yeah. It's like a meteorological term. Yeah. So we had this trip to Gotland, me and two friends, and there were these algae on the water. So the water was totally flat. You know, there was not a ripple on the water because the algae kind of like just calms down everything. And then at the same time, it was blowing maybe 8 knots, maybe something like that. And the J80 with 8 knots and the Jennaker, it's doing 6 knots, you know. So we're just hauling ass through this, you know, totally calm, or the water was just, it looked like it didn't blow anything at all, but we were still doing 6 knots. And it was like 20 degrees Celsius in the middle of the night. And me and my friend were just like, oh man, this is what sailing should be all the time. You know, and he's like, yeah, that would be nice. And I'm like, yeah, we should sail to the Caribbean. And then the third guy was like, yeah, great idea, you should do that. And we're like, yeah, let's do it. And my friend Andreas is like, yeah, what, which boat should we take? And I'm like, yeah, we already got the boat, so yeah, let's take my boat. And he's like, yeah, great idea. And then this third guy, he's a little bit more cautious, doesn't take that much risk in life. And he's just like, you're joking, right? And we're like, no, why not? This is a fun boat to sail, you know? We could trailer it to Portugal. We don't have to sail it all the way from Sweden. We can just take it on the trailer to Portugal, yeah, drop it in the water there. And then we'll just skip like the hard parts of the sail, which is the English Channel, the North Sea, and the Bay of Biscay, you know? You're just like, three of the worst oceans on the planet. You just like, we'll just take the trailer and skip those. And he's just, no, you're still joking, right? And we're like, no, we're not joking. We're going to do this. So we kind of like decided on that night that we should do it. And then we started hunting sponsors and like preparing the boat. It took, I think, 6 months of work just prepping the boat. So it would be possible to do it without like losing the rig, or, and you need self-steering and stuff because you can't steer a boat manually for 21 days or whatever it takes to cross the Atlantic. So yeah, so that's how the idea came into, like, how it started. So yeah, we just trailered the boat to Portugal, and then we sailed to the Canary Islands, and then we stayed there, bought some, like, stocked up on all the food and stuff that you needed for the crossing. And then we sailed to the Caribbean. And then we went there. That's where I started kite foiling. So it was a great trip.
The boat is similar, because I used to sail Melges 24, kind of similar to that.
Yeah, it's like a Melges 24, a beefed up Melges 24. So it's a half meter longer or something like that. It's 8 meters. The Melges 24 is 7 point something, right? So it's a little bit bigger. And it's also, it doesn't have a lifting keel. So the keel is fixed.
It's fixed. It's more stable, probably, huh?
Yeah. So it's a little bit, it's a heavier boat than the Melges 24. I would not take a Melges 24 across the Atlantic, but I would.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, I wouldn't. It is fine. It's not very comfortable, but it's a safe boat. The Melges 24, I don't think you would do that.
I looked at your blog, and as I said, we're going to put that in the show notes. Some like pirates encounter, like your dinghy got away and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
If people are interested, they should go and look it up. That looks super cool. I want to like come back to your transition from your old job to now foil sessions, which, as we discussed before, that's your full job. And to me, that sounds super cool, but also quite scary. How are you feeling? How are your anxiety levels like every day now?
Yeah, I'm going to give this 2 or 3 years and see if I can turn it into a viable business. Right now, it's not. I need a lot more subscribers to be able to make a living out of this. But right now it's super fun, you know. I'm having the best work ever. It's so much fun, and I can actually go foiling while working, which is pretty amazing. But No, I'm not that scared, really. You know, you can always just get another job if it fails. And I think that's one of the lessons I've learned from, like, I've done a lot of, I did a few seasons in Chamonix, and then we did this crossing of the Atlantic. And there's like, even if you do take a risk every now and then in your life, it kind of like always works out. Sometimes you fail, sometimes you don't, but you always land on your feet. At least that's my experience. So I'm my anxiety level is probably lower than it was when I worked at Yubico, I'd say. But I don't
Very
know where
nice.
this will end. You know, I hope in 3 years' time, maybe we could have another chat and I'll be like, yeah, this is super successful. And now I've been able to hire a developer to do an Android app as well. That would be awesome, you know? But yeah, we'll see. You never know.
What's have you like set a number of people that need to be subscribed to continue, or are you just gonna look at the whole pictures, how you feel, how the app goes to make a decision?
Well, it's kind of easy to like figure out if you count backwards from like what if I look at my previous salary and if I want the same salary from making this app, I could like calculate back and get to a pretty hard number of users that I need to have. But I think this is so much more fun, you know. I get to interact with users in a totally different way. If you make like a encryption app or an authentication app, those users will never come up to you like or send you a message like, yeah, this app is awesome and I've got this idea for a feature. It's like it would be awesome if you could get the destination and then maybe a cross-track error, you know. That's not happening if you're doing an app for a security company. So it's a lot more fun, you know, building the app, interacting with the users, and also building an app that solves an issue that like your biggest interest in life, you know, kind of. So yeah, let's be real. I'm like, encryption is super fun. It's hard. It's difficult, but it's not my life, you know, interest. So this is a lot more fun. And I think to get back to your question, is there a set number of users that I need? I think that would be a lot. I could do this for a lot lower salary than I did my previous job because it's so much more fun. So, yeah.
So no hard number so far, but all the listeners, the viewers, if you want to just test it, give it a go, because I really like it. I enjoy it. I think it's fun. And as you said, there are improvements coming all the time. It's a safety thing as well. So it's a really cool app. Yeah, test it. It's
Yeah.
just iOS so far, as you've stated. You said Garmin is super interesting. So maybe there's going to be a version for this. So that's really
Yeah.
exciting.
Yeah, I've got a Garmin watch as well, and I really like that. So I would be super happy to add Garmin support as well. It's a little bit cumbersome to get the data from the Garmin watch to the iPhone application though. So but yeah, Garmin app will happen a lot sooner than an Android app, unfortunately. So
That's
but
just what it is.
yeah.
I had a person asking me a question due to the test I did with the long distance foils, and he asked, is it possible to export data from Foil Session to like put on Strava or somewhere else?
Yeah, that's also a thing that's a lot of people are asking for. So you could do it today with an app called Health. I can't remember the name of it. There is an app at least. I could send you the link and then you maybe add it
Yeah, I'm gonna put it.
to the
Yeah, let's
notes.
do that.
So there is an excellent app that will synchronize all sessions, not only Foil Session sessions, but all workout sessions on your Apple Watch to Strava.
Okay.
So even if you're using, yeah, let's say Foil Motion or the Mango guy foiling app. With
Yeah.
that app, it will actually sync those sessions into Strava. So I think that's like the easy way to do it. I might get to add support for that, but since that app is working so well, I would probably, I would not wait for my app to have support for that. I would just download that app. And try it. And it works for all, you know, if you have a, I don't know, biking app that syncs to HealthKit, that could also sync to Strava via this third-party app.
All right, so we're gonna put that in the show notes, and
Yeah.
maybe just a little, another little plug from you. You don't just have that Foil Sessions app. You have another app as well. Now that winter is coming, people might as well be interested in that. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so that's where that's like the seed for the Foil app came from. So I made a so there's a lot of app. I do a lot of skiing and I do a lot of randonnée or ski touring. So you got these skins under your skis, so you just like hike up the hill and then you remove the skins and you fix the heel on the bindings, and then you ski like a normal downhill ski down again, and then you repeat that as many times as you want or until you get tired. So there's like a lot of apps for downhill skiing, or there is like one really good app that everyone uses. It's called Slopes, so it's excellent. So if you're just down into downhill skiing, you know, in a ski resort, that's the app that you should get. But there are no apps that focuses on randonnée or ski touring. Because when you're ski touring, you're mostly interested in the data from the way up, you know, how fast, how many meters per hour am I doing right now? What's my pace and heart rate and all that stuff. And like the Slopes app, it actually figures out that, yeah, you're going uphill, so you're in a chairlift or something. So I just turn off GPS and everything to save battery. So it kind of like stops recording the interesting parts, whereas my app actually focuses on those interesting parts if you're doing ski touring. So so it's basically an app for ski touring. It's called MTN Tracks. So you can find it on the App Store as well. But yeah, it's for ski touring and it's great. It doesn't have as much features because there are, you don't do any tacks or jibes or you don't count waves or anything. It mostly keep track of your ascent rate. That's like the interesting part.
M2M as in mountain to mountain?
MTN, like mountain, like short for.
MTN. Okay, all right. All
MTN
right.
Tracks.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
We're gonna link that as well in the show notes if people are interested.
Awesome.
Well, thank you very much, Jens, for coming on the show. Is there anything else you just want to tell the world?
No, I don't think so.
Then I'm going to do it for you. Get this app, test it, and if there's anything, you can ask him to maybe implement something, which is
sure. I quite often actually do that. Thank you for having me, Matt.
Thank you very much, Jens, for coming on. For all the listeners, the viewers, thank you very much for subscribing or going on our Patreon to also help me out a little bit. That helps a lot. So see you guys in the next one. Thank you very much, Jens.
Thank you.